So let's talk. We've talked a little bit about fraud and materiality, but let's talk about when, under contract law, a misrepresentation is fraudulent or material. So the restatement starts with when it's a fraudulent misrepresentation. So there's a higher standard here because you have to intend the assertion, and you're trying to say something, you intentionally say something where you're trying to get the other party to agree to the bargain. If the misrepresentation, the ways you can go wrong here is first, a misrepresentation, the maker knows or believes that the assertion is not in accord with the facts. High level, I'm trying to sell you my car, and I say, this car has never been in an accident, when I know for sure it is. That's clearly, I know, high level, black and white, but that's clearly a problem, especially if I'm trying to get you to buy my car, right? The second one does not, when the person making the misrepresentation does not have the confidence that he states or implies in the truth of the assertion. So, easy example again. I'm 100% certain this car has never been in an accident when I have no idea. Or I just don't, you know, I was certainly not 100% certain about it. I know while I was driving the car, it didn't have an accident, but I don't know what may have happened prior to that. So that's an example where you can be in trouble for a fraudulent misrepresentation. And finally, if you make the misrepresentation and you know that you do not have the basis that you state or imply. I've checked all the records about this car, and it's never been an accident. Well, if you haven't checked those records, then that's a problem, right? So I know these are high-level, easy examples, but we'll go through some of the hypotheticals later, and you can see that it becomes more muddled as there are more facts. And then a material misrepresentation, which runs all the way through this law and the rules, is misrepresentation is material if it would be likely to induce a reasonable person to manifest his assent, or the person making the misrepresentation knows that it would be likely to induce this. So these are basic, the basic contract principles I wanted to go over, other than one more, which talks about consequences. And we talked earlier about some of the consequences, but at least under contract law, if you make a fraudulent or material misrepresentation, and the person you've made it to is justified in relying on that, then the contract is voidable. There, of course, could be other issues under tort and contract law, including damages and, of course, liability. Now, I mentioned earlier, so let's go to the next slide, about codes of conduct. And I'll be honest with you, I've worked in-house one time at least, and I've worked as an engineer for Exxon. I'm not sure I ever read the code of conduct, but if you're negotiating for a company, you might check their code of conduct. You actually might check it just as a good employee as well, but, you know, look at Levi Strauss and Company, their policy, honesty. We will not say things that are false. We will never deliberately mislead. My issue here is this is actually stricter than some of the requirements we have looked at before in the law, where there's a materiality requirement, as well as we'll look at in the ethics, where there's a materiality requirement. So I just would caution you to check those codes of conduct. They talk about that we will be as candid as possible, openly and freely sharing information as appropriate for the relationship. So you could argue there's a materiality piece there, but it's certainly not very well defined and very gray. Regarding ADP, it's more an example of consequences. So ADP states associates are expected, to be honest and ethical. And you see here, ADP says zero tolerance of noncompliance and or retaliation. Any violations will result in swift, progressive discipline, including possible termination of employment. So there are consequences. And these codes of conduct, like I said, sometimes they're probably, they may be reviewed by lawyers, but they're certainly stricter than some of the other requirements. In addition to consequences, there could be consequences, again, to your reputation, which I've touched on. That's the next slide. So we live in a relatively small, live and work in a relatively small community, attorneys and intellectual property attorneys. So your reputation often precedes you in these areas to other persons in that community. And if you get a reputation for sharp practice, it can result it can impact ongoing relationships between companies, especially if you're the one negotiating and representing a company. Also, terms of follow-up deals.